sustainable debts, and we want to see basic regulations for responsible lending and borrowing implemented in the international financial system.
And we just have about 20 seconds, and you said that the World Bank has most of the debt, but do you know any of the major U.S. banks that have a portion of the Philippine debt?
So about 5% of the debt right now is either held by the U.S. government or by U.S. banks, again, going back to the Marcos regime. Without an audit, we don't know the exact breakdowns. So that's why an audit is so important right now.
Eric LeCompte, I want to thank you for being with us, Executive Director of Jubilee USA. That does it for our broadcast. If you'd like a copy, go to our website at democracynow.org. You can also find there transcripts, video, and audio of all of our past broadcasts over, well, close to 18 years. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Berker, Nafel Saramante, Nimrod Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Akhav, Hani Massoud, Robbie Carantina, Gustar, Amy Littlefield, Cassandra Lazare, Messiah Reds, Jarena Nadura, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Naguera, engineer. Special thanks to Elizabeth Press, Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
This is WHFR, Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. And we are local news and alternative views for Dearborn and surrounding areas. My name is Jay Koronek. So happy to be with you today. And I'm joined by John Conroy, our WHFR News Team staff member. Welcome, John, and happy holidays.
Thank you, Jay, and also to you.
And they're still continuing, of course. Big New Year's Day coming up. So this is our end of the year and New Year's Day celebration show. So this is very exciting. It's going to be good, right?
Yes, I can hear.
You can't hear. Okay. Well, that's the way it goes, John. His headphones problem. It's so end of the year. We need some new headphones or new headphone amp, one way or the other. We'll work that out. Let me start with some of the headlines from the last week. And, you know, it's a soft news time. Everybody's on vacation or out of town, and so there's not a lot of hard news stories to cover. So we'll cover those quickly. And we've got some special holiday issues and treats coming up, too, though. In the Press and Guide, Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday, that is the 22nd. Today is, if I didn't already say, it is December 27th, 2013. If you're listening on the podcast, yes, it's still 2013 for us here in the studio at the time of recording. Somewhere back on page 14A, AAA, Automobile Club of America, they say that nearly 3 million people are going to be traveling during the holidays. And I wonder how many of them are going to enjoy it. I'm sorry, but... some difficult weather in some parts of the country, but hey, it is winter in this part of the world, so hope everyone will drive safely. If you're thinking of getting out of town for this weekend, going somewhere for New Year's Eve, like New York City, to watch the ball drop. I understand there's some kind of ball that drops in Traverse City, Michigan, too. There's actually a gathering there. Have you ever heard about that, John?
I have not about Traverse City, but I am from the New York, Connecticut area, so I know... what that is in Times Square.
Right. Can you hear yourself, John?
I'm good now, yes.
Oh, okay, fine. Okay.
Our technical problems are somewhat resolved here. I was listening to a show online that I like. It's an ecology show out of Toronto, out of the CIUT, which is the University of Toronto radio station, and they couldn't even get into the station. They were recording on some sort of small recording deck at the guy's house. In order to get the show done. So that's independent, non-commercial radio for you folks. We we make it happen as it happens because, you know, something might always go wrong. in any event, and we don't have a backup. Okay. And so, you know, however you're going to celebrate that, I think it's very interesting that some people want to spend midnight Christmas Eve even further north, out of doors in the center of town. No doubt there's flashing lights and there's alcoholic beverages involved somewhere. That's all good. In my part of Dearborn, though, every night it's like New Year's Eve. Because I'm not far from Greenfield Village. And they have special holiday nights going on. And I don't know how long, but I bet it's going on all the way through New Year's Eve. Every night at 9:45, they start fireworks. Now, you might say, what's wrong with fireworks? Well, they include those explosive things, those bombs. And it goes boom, 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 and then boom, 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 at 10 p.m. every night. And it started over a week ago. And, you know, I'm thinking as a supporter of the Henry Ford, as a donor, pass holder and all that, I was going to do it last year, to threaten them. I mean, it's just, some of us would like to have it quiet at that time of night. You say, well, nobody goes to bed at 10 p.m. I don't think that's the issue. I just find it disturbing, and it scares my cat. Well, so, you know, that's bad enough right there. So,
a little excessive, I guess.
In fact, last year I had a dog in the house, and it even scared the dog. So, I mean, dogs, I guess some are spooked by loud noises, too. In any event, be careful out there. Drive safely, drive sanely. Remember the designated driver bit. That's very, very important. So, let's see. Phone call coming in, so I'm going to let John take it. We'll see if it's important. And we're speaking about animals just a minute ago. Many animals are available for adoption at the Dearborn Animal Shelter. And we mentioned that this last week, I know. This time of year, what a wonderful gift, you know, really, for the family to show compassion and love and to receive it back than adopting an animal at the Dearborn Shelter.
Okay.
And I've got the story here, which might break your heart a little bit, but that's okay. It's holidays. We get a little emotional, right? Okay. At the Dearborn Animal Shelter, which is all run by volunteers under, you know, contract from the Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter, under contract to the City of Dearborn, saving the city a lot of money and doing a fantastic job. Almost every week in the Press and Guide, maybe every week, they have a picture of an animal to adopt. And this week it's Bartholomew, although that's written Bartholomew. Mm-hmm. Yes. Meow.
Meow, meow, meow.
Bartholomew. That would be a hard one. Just call him Bart, I guess, when you get him. Or you could change the name if you do adopt him. They say this handsome one-year-old boy, a male, is sporting a black shiny coat with white markings. He is a snuggly boy and is ready to find his forever home. He is only $25 to adopt. All adoption fees include sterilization, microchip, and age-appropriate vaccinations. To see all adoptable animals, you can visit the shelter online, www.dearbornanimals.org, and start the application process or stop by in person. They're 2661 Greenfield Road. And that's just south of the I-94 overpass. And, of course, they do have a phone number, too, for more information or to learn about other available animals. You can call them 313-943-2697. Again, that's 313-943-2697. That would be a gift of compassion and love, of giving, and, let me tell you, receiving. And maybe if it's not for yourself, maybe you can maybe have a relative that's maybe living alone. And it's been proven that people living alone, if they have an animal, they're going to live longer and they're going to be happier. It certainly gives them something to do. And my cat keeps me on schedule, puts me to bed at night, gets me up in the morning. I don't need an alarm clock. You know, it's a wonderful thing to have that relationship. In addition to many other good relationships in this world, of course, and we wish you as many of them as you can handle, certainly. In the Times Herald from Dearborn this week, as he reaches away from the microphone, It was mentioned last week that Ted Tufosky at the last Dearborn City Council meeting, and that's the last meeting for Susan Sereny and Nancy Hubbard, to be on the council. And but nonetheless, Tom Tufosky actually said he wants to vote for a sign that'll let people know that this is going to be the new home of City Hall offices, which is going to be called the Dearborn Administrative Center. It's going to be west of the Dearborn Centennial Library in the so-called former ADC building, and that the city bought about a year ago. And it is going to happen sometime like next summer. And it's pretty certain about that. So he said, I'm in favor of that. But it's interesting because he's always said, and he did at that council meeting, vote against two agenda items that had to do with architectural and engineering services and furniture installation and layout consulting for the new facility. Because on general principles, he's against it. So he was the lone vote against those two bills. But then he said, I would be for putting up a sign telling people that, you know, by next summer, this is where they go for information about the city. So I think it's a little contradictory there. If he symbolically wants to be against everything about the new administrative center, why would he say, and they didn't do it yet, folks, so there's no sign going up. Would that be a waste of taxpayer dollars? To have a sign there saying this is the new home of, I don't know. But he's in favor of the sign. But I guess because he's voted no on the other things, that nobody introduced a motion and wanted to vote yes. So he just got done voting no twice on two items that are just necessary. And, you know, it's going to happen. So we're looking forward to it and hoping everything will go well and that the remodeling and renovation is not going to be more expensive than what they expected. Some people are saying, oh, no, it's not going to cost $10 million. The last I heard, in fact, was it's going to cost close to $15 million to renovate and move in to the new facility. And I know at the outset, at the beginning, they said, "Oh, it's going to cost us $12 million to stay in the old building. We got to fix the old one, the old City Hall, $12 million, old City Hall and the parking deck too together, $12 million. And this is only going to cost us, I remember people say, $8 or $10 million to renovate and move in the new building. And the last I heard from City Council in one of the minutes is it's going to cost $15 million. Whoa, that's a little more than before." And I know there's a leaky roof. They've got to repair the whole roof, and they've got to do some other things, as well as new furniture and desks to fit the size and space of the and the decor of the new facility. But who knows? They might find an architectural problem still, and I won't get into what it could be that could raise the price even more. Of course, that new facility, to be fair to everybody, is going to be more energy efficient and therefore more cost efficient each year. So there's payback once we get there that will be accruing compared to staying at the present City Hall complex. And, you know, Mayor O'Reilly was reelected by 75% or 80%, something like that, of the voters last November. So you'd have to say there's not a large majority of people that disagreed with that action, which mostly was blamed on him or was associated with him. So if 80% of the people are on your side, that's pretty good. But let's just hope for the sake of all of us that they're not going to have any cost overruns that go more than $15 million, because that would be unfortunate. Finishing up the papers, though, there's an op-ed that I'm recommending to you, and that's in the Dearborn Times Herald. It's from a Michael Farron about Amtrak and the Michigan State budget. He points out that, of course, Amtrak in Michigan is being subsidized by the taxpayers of Michigan. And the money is coming out of the so-called highway fund budget, which I think comes from, what, your licensing fees and the gas tax, John?
That must be a big part of it.
I don't have your mic on. Go ahead, tell us. Go ahead, agree with me. You can talk now.
That is a big part of it, Jay. I'm not sure what else is involved in that.
Yeah. Now, there might be. I mean, I think the majority of the money comes from the gasoline taxes. That's sort of like user fees. I understand that. You know, the people that are driving the most are burning up the highways the most, and they need highways fixed in a lot of places if they're driving that much. But I think there's also the license plate taxes go into that fund too. In any event, he points out what I already knew, and that he said, you know, Amtrak is not more efficient than buses. If you look at energy costs overall, they're not more efficient than just putting more buses in place for travel between cities in Michigan. Okay, he's living in the past, I have to say. And you go read him. He's not given credit for being associated with the Mackinac Center, a policy center, the conservative think tank, but I believe he is, because that's really all they use for op-eds at the Times-Herald. No disrespect there, but it is very one-sided, isn't it? Because it is always a conservative think tank. So they think, but only in conservative ways, which sort of contradicts what I think of as true thinking, which I would think should be open-minded. Nonetheless, they always find facts to support their points of view. And his point of view is basically that why should Michigan taxpayers subsidize a less efficient means of transportation out of their gas tax dollars? And my simple answer is trains can be more efficient as soon as we get some new ones, as soon as we get some more tracks in place. And I know it's an upfront cost here, folks, but trains can be electrified. They don't have to be the old-fashioned diesel trains, you know, with the old-fashioned train stations. He's not looking in the future at all. And the future is mass transit, folks. And we'll keep cars for going specialized places that, you know, mass transit can't get you to, or just for, you know, entertainment, fun. I mean, maybe you just buy a convertible and only use it in the summer or something when the sun is shining. I think gasoline-powered or individual privately owned cars, unless you're very rich, are going to be less and less important, and rightly so. And there should be mass transit for everybody to quickly and efficiently and safely get from one place to another. Do I need to mention Metro Transit in Chicago? Or Toronto? Has any of our listeners been there? I've been both places. It's fantastic. New York City, fantastic subway system. Everybody knows about the subways in New York. Well, there's some crime problems. Not that much, really. Not that much. The only thing that's bad that didn't happen during the last time that Lower Manhattan flooded is they luckily were able to put up some barriers, and they kept the subways from flooding. Because if they all flood out, they're all underground. If they flood out, you know, even down at the lower end, they're all going to flood. If they all flood, well, that's like electrical line, because those subway trains are running on electricity. So they all short out. It would be a total, it would be the end of the subway system in New York City, probably forever, because they couldn't afford the cost of going in, pumping out all the salt water, which is corrosive right there. You'd have to replace all the wires, all the lines, all the train cars. That'd be the end of the subway in New York City, if the water ever receded enough for there to be a New York City. And in this case, it did. But about one-fourth of Manhattan Island had significant above-ground water. And it's amazing. One of the problems with the subway is, all I'm saying is, if you're in an area right next to an ocean or a hurricane-type area, it's probably not a good idea to build a subway. That the time is numbered for that. But in Detroit, we're hoping to, just talking to someone yesterday, who was I talking to? I don't know. About the line from Detroit to Pontiac going up Woodward. It's going to be above ground line. Oh, I was talking to somebody from Detroit Edison, name dropper, who was involved. But it's very confused right now, and they want to have the trains be electrified, but actually be hybrids, because part of the time they're going to be powered by the tracks. The electricity will come to the track to the train, like the old trolley cars. The trolley cars in Detroit back in the early 1950s, they got power from above. There were overhead wires that the trolley cars actually connected to by metal arms. There were sparks were flying at every corner. It was hilarious to watch. It was lovely in winter, or nighttime. But not that unsafe, believe it or not, folks, even with all the sparks flying. So that line, and I forget what it's called. There's an acronym for that special train, but it's going to be above ground, and it's going to be a constant daily shuttle from Detroit to Pontiac. And, of course, once that's in place, you know, right now they're trying to get the whole so-called Woodward Corridor in Detroit to be sort of the area that's going to be rebuilt first. I know in Midtown they've got a lot of development on each side of Woodward Avenue there, mostly on the east side of Woodward Avenue in Midtown. But it's, you know, maybe Detroit can rebuild itself from Woodward out, you know, from expanding east and expanding west. And if that transport line is there, I think people will use it. Okay, and it'll give other businesses an idea. Well, let's have a new shopping center, new shopping complex right next to one of those, you know, stations, one of those stops for that new train line, and then you know, it'll just expand business and who knows, maybe even tourism in that.
Well, certainly make it more convenient for the masses of people.
Mm-hmm. And even for those that might still work in Detroit, you know, I mean, you can still go, Detroit will benefit, downtown Detroit will benefit, all the way to Pontiac, and Pontiac needs to benefit. And it just, there's a little confusion about the project, but it looks like there's funding. The state did fund that, hundreds of millions of dollars. It's just a matter of getting the plans together. As I said, there's some confusion if it's going to be hybrid power, if the trains are going to save up electricity, and then go for a couple miles until they reach another junction box where they can get recharged. There's still a little, there's some issues on that. But so I'm sorry to say, you know, Michael Farron, even though you're an engineer and all that, you're talking about the train system in the past. And I don't think we want to live there. You know, this is a train system from the 1950s. The train systems of the 21st century, we can make them a lot better. And we can make these small commuter trains, or we can make the big long-distance trains. And it's all going to be better in the future. And yes, we can afford it. We have to.
Well, having grown up with a father who commuted every day to New York City on a commuter train, they were electric trains. Mm-hmm. And the only drawback, if there was a power outage, those trains sat. But for the most part, those trains ran great, and thousands of people went to work every day. And in holiday times, those trains were packed taking tourists into the city, and it was a very popular way to go.
Yeah, and what killed the electrified trolleys in Detroit wasn't safety. Nope, they were all over the city of Detroit, all the major roads. I mean, Schoolcraft had one, and I know from almost all the way downtown, and and I and my mother and my grandmother, before I went to school, we were riding them at least once or twice a week down to go shopping in downtown Detroit and come back. What killed them was lobbying. He said, look, we're Detroit, we're the Motor City. So it was the automobile company said, it looks bad for Detroit not to use cars everywhere, you know, because maybe we can keep other people from building a trolley line or a subway line or a bus line and just sell more cars to people. So I understand that they wanted to sell more cars, and it looked bad for the Motor City to be using electric trolleys as their primary means for average person's transportation. That's why the bus systems are not so good in Detroit, because we hadn't really depended that much on bus systems except for extremely poor people, not for everybody. Like the bus systems in Austin, Texas, where I visited all the time. It's fantastic. Almost every street, north, south, east, west, has got a bus line, okay? You don't have to walk 10 miles to get to a bus line. And they're always on time or ahead of schedule. And they go until, like, on most streets, at least until 2 or 3 in the morning. And then they start back up at 4. And how much is it? Well, round trip now for a whole day wherever you want to go is $1.25. $1.25. You say, well, that's subsidized by the city. Yes, it is. Why not? Why shouldn't everybody pay for it? Everybody uses it. Poor people, rich people. Oh, yeah, some super rich that drive big cars, you know. But it's so good. It's so clean. It's so efficient. And it's buses. Okay, so Michael Farron would love buses, and that's what they got there. So take your choice, take your, and whatever your opinion is, you know, back it up with future facts, not information from the past. We're going to take a short break here on the new WHFR Journal, and the first commentary from Jim Hightower for today, and he's nationally known, well, this is about philosophy, but he's sort of a philosopher. He's a progressive, he's a populist, and so he does have that sort of twist or turn to his thoughts. But here's a point that he came up with on Christmas Day, and he was thinking back to his own father. Here's Jim Hightower on WHFR.FM station, Making Waves.
This special day got me to thinking about America's spirit of giving. And I don't mean this overdone business of Christmas gifts. I mean our true spirit of giving. Giving of ourselves. Yes, we are a country of rugged individualists. Yet there's also a deep, community-minded streak in each of us. We're a people who believe in the notion that we're all in this together, that we can make our individual lives better by contributing to the common good. The establishment media pays little attention to grassroots generosity, focusing instead on the occasional showy donation by what it calls philanthropists, big tycoons who give a little piece of their billions to some university or museum in exchange for getting a building named after them. But in my mind, the real philanthropists are the millions of you ordinary folks who have precious little money to give, but consistently give of yourselves and do it without demanding that your name be engraved on a granite wall. My own daddy, rest his soul, was a fine example of this. With half a dozen other guys in Denison, Texas, he started the Little League Baseball program, volunteering to build the park, sponsor and coach the teams, run the squawking PA system, etc., etc. Even after I graduated from Little League, Daddy stayed working at it because his involvement was not merely for his kids, but for all. He felt the same way about being taxed to build a public library in town. I don't recall him ever going in that building, much less checking out a book, but he wanted it to be there for the community, and he was happy to pay his part. Not that he was a do-good liberal, for God's sake. Indeed, he called himself a conservative. This is Jim Hightower saying, my daddy didn't even know he had a political philosophy, but he did, and it's the best I've ever heard. He would often say to me, everybody does better when everybody does better. If only our national leaders in Washington and on Wall Street would begin practicing this true American philosophy.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
And you're listening to the new WHFR Journal for Friday, December 27, 2013. Is it too early to say Happy New Year, John?
Oh, never too early to say Happy New Year.
Okay. Okay. You know, both the local papers that we use and love, thank goodness we've got two local papers here, weekly papers, well, biweekly. Is it biweekly if it's twice a week? Well, Dearborn Press and Guide is twice a week, and Dearborn Times Herald is once a week. You know, they've had, since it's a slow news time this last month, a couple of editions where they go over the top stories of 2013. And I don't want to do that. I mean, folks, you can go back and listen to the archives. You know, if you don't remember 2013 and want to get past it and want to move on, I think the important thing is moving on. What are you expecting next year? What stories are you looking forward to? That's what I would like to do. You know, I like to see it over and done with, that Dearborn moves into the new City Hall buildings, whatever they call it. City Minister, get it done. Just do it. I'd like to see the new train station open. It's been delayed now. It was supposed to open sort of in the spring here in Dearborn. Multimodal with all kinds of bus lines and, you know, pedestrians and bike transport all designed into the plan, but it won't open, it won't start for use until August at the earliest. And so get these things done. That's what I'd like to see. And many other initiatives, you know, in the city. I wish the best to all of our new elected officials for the Dearborn City Council. There's a couple new people there, and of course a new council president, Susan Habaja. And so we'll obviously we wish everyone well, but I'd like to see a few of these things, the initiatives that were started, get done. You know, certainly nationally, Obamacare is there. Get your insurance now, folks, okay? Get that done, and then try it out, and then complain next year if you have to, but get it done. If you've got to, still register, I don't know. They might still be extending the deadline. I don't know. They extended it from, it was Monday of this week, and then they extended it to Tuesday. This is nationally. So healthcare.gov, and check it out if you need health insurance and you don't have it any other way. Anything you can think of you'd like to see in next year happen or finish, John?
Well, Jay, I'd like certainly to see more students enroll in all the colleges, but especially Henry Ford Community College. Along those lines, we have a process happening right now at the Fairlane Mall, yep, where you can waive newly admitted students can waive your application fee of $30.
Yeah.
December 27th through the 29th and January 3rd through the 5th at the center of the mall. I think that's a very nice service.
And that means today, the 27th through the Sunday. So Friday through Sunday this weekend and Friday through Sunday next weekend, there's going to be a promotional table for WHFR. Our admissions office people are going to be there. And if you have not been a student here before, okay, you can be admitted right there. You have to take probably some important documents. I'd say check out our website, hfcc.edu, to see what sort of ID and other things. But you won't have to pay the $30 admission fee, but only during these special in-person events at Fairlane Town Center. They had never done that before. Obviously, one reason they're considering it is, well, they're down a few percent, but they thought they might be down 15% over last year. That was when the big group of students came in last fall and last winter, a year ago fall and this year's winter back in January. And we did drop in student enrollment this fall. But things go up and down for a number of reasons with community college enrollment. Usually when economic times are getting better, we have fewer people coming to community college. When times are bad, especially if they're all of a sudden bad, our enrollment goes way up. People looking for retraining, or maybe they didn't have the time before, and now they got the time because they're out of work or something, unfortunately. Whatever it is, there is sort of a cyclical pattern. And the main campus is closed now between semesters. Mm-hmm. Winter, not winter break, but it's a holiday break, semester break. Closed down on the 21st and will not reopen until January 2nd, next Thursday. Okay, so you could get admitted starting next January online. You have to, for admission, you've got to come in person to the college. But in this case, you don't have to wait. You can come to this event at Fairlane Town Center, also known as the Fairlane Mall, right here in Dearborn. And in somewhere in the middle of the mall, there's a HFCC promotional table, and there will waive the $30 admission fee. Now, of course, there's plenty of other fees that you'll find out about, as well as tuition. But we're the cheapest act going, you know. I mean, there may be somebody in the state of Michigan, community college, that charges a little bit less in tuition. But we're very, very economical. If anything in higher ed can be economical these days. So this is cool, I think. If you or someone you know wants to save $30 and become a student here, and by the way, you don't have to start in January, okay? If you go there this weekend or next weekend, you could say, well, I'm not going to start until spring semester, which starts in May, or summer semester, or next fall. That's okay. Get admitted now. Avoid the rush. Okay, you save the $30. And so even next weekend, and January 3rd, Friday, the admission office is open on campus. But if you go to Fairlane Town Center instead to get admitted, you'll save the $30. So that's this weekend and next weekend, Friday through Sunday, HFCC enrollment, not enrollment, well, it's enrollment in a way. It's admissions office. If you want to get admitted for the first time to the college here, they can take care of it at Fairlane Town Center, also known as Fairlane Mall. And do we have any hours on there? Probably the whole hours of the mall, probably 10 to 10 or something.
It doesn't say the exact number of hours, but I believe it would be that.
They're going to be there all day, I bet.
All day.
Yeah, as long as they're open anyway. Mm. time. So, cool idea, and nobody is against saving some money if they're already intending to do something, I guess. Okay. Well, what else do we have here? We were talking about Jim Hightower's, well, we heard about Jim Hightower's dad and his personal philosophy of trying to give back and caring for others. Here's an editorial from this week's Detroit Metro Times by our favorite holiday curmudgeon. He's not exactly a Uncle Scrooge, but Jack Lessenberry. And this was published December 24th in the Metro Times. "Well, I hope by the time you're reading this, I'll be snuggled under the tree, quote, playing war games with that new PlayStation 4 that I really want, Mommy, I really do. After all, you can get one on Amazon for only $797.96 plus shipping, and the games are barely $59.99 each. Might as well buy two of them while you're at it, Mom, so we don't have to pack it when we go to Florida. Believe it or not, I actually heard a conversation like that while shopping last week," says Jack Lessenberry. "It wasn't me. I wouldn't know how to turn a PlayStation on. My video game experience ended with Pac-Man. But there's been a fair amount said about the new PlayStation in the media, and I am sure some kiddies are getting one today." In other words, Christmas Day, probably. "However," he goes on to say, "there was also another story last week, one that saw a lot less coverage. For a shocking number of kids in Michigan, Christmas will be a kind of reality game, you might call it. So you want a meal? You want to eat a meal?" That's the reality game show title. "So you want to eat a meal? The fact is, things for our state's children are bad and getting worse. Last week, the Michigan League for Public Policy released the annual Kids Count in Michigan report." Kids Count in Michigan. That's the report. "The number of young children who qualify for federal food assistance rose by more than 50% just between 2005 and 2012, the most recent year for which they have statistics. Nearly two out of every five kids qualify for nutritional help because their families are so poor. That's 40%, folks. More than likely, some of those children are in families that have used up their 48 months of cash welfare benefits and have now been kicked off the rolls forever by our compassionate, conservative state leaders." And I think John Engler, no disrespect here, but let's give credit where discredit is due. John Engler started that whole idea. We're going to cut off welfare at a certain point. Just a lot of moochers, you know, they're just, you know, this will force them to get jobs. Yeah? What if you're sick? What if you're infirm? What if you're old? What if you're too young, like kids? What are you going to do? Well, it doesn't matter. So 48 months, cash welfare, and it's gone. "So when poverty grows," Jack Lessenberry goes on to say, "statistics have long shown that family tensions and domestic violence soar. Accordingly, more than 200,000 children are living in families that have been investigated for abuse and neglect in recent years." That's 200,000 plus. "No, not all of those families may have been guilty, but this was a huge increase over a year ago, and the state is certainly not paying for lots of new investigators. Some may be tempted to think this is primarily a Detroit problem. It is anything but," he says. "Oh, conditions are terrible for kids in Detroit, no question about it. Most kids grow up in families that are actually and officially poverty-stricken. Nearly all qualify for free or reduced school lunches. 41% of babies and their mothers didn't get adequate prenatal care before they were born. And try this one on for size. 12% of Detroit children tested positive for lead poisoning." Lead poisoning in the 21st century. "Very bad indeed," he says, "but child poverty and domestic problems are growing faster in rural areas than anywhere else, even in Washtenaw County, home to smug Ann Arbor and even more smug University of Michigan. One out of every six kids lives in poverty, the rate of just a decade ago. So instead of two out of five in Detroit, it's one out of six in the rural areas." Okay. And that is, you say, what? Yeah. "Nothing in this report," he goes on to say, "should surprise anyone except perhaps for one thing. The number of births to teenage mothers actually fell. This isn't a case of wild indulgence by the poor, therefore. This is our government slowly and systematically cutting off resources to the poor and vulnerable. Couple that with the effects of a lingering recession that punished most those who were least able to afford it. Add to that a nation that, since 1981, has been steadily transferring wealth from the poorest half of our population to the richest 5% or so. Here's what is most insane about all this. These children are our future, comrades. We could easily make things better for them. Gilda Jacobs, who now heads the Michigan League for Human Services, which formerly Ishmael Ahmed was head of, he was the Department of Social Services.
Department, yes.
So who is the Michigan League? Well, they're a nonprofit, obviously. So anyway, Gilda is in head of the Michigan League. She was in the state Senate for 8 years before she moved to the Michigan League for Human Services. She and her staff know perfectly well what could be done easily and fairly painlessly to improve these children's lives. Number one, reinstate the full 20% earned income tax credit, that's EITC, that was cut to 6% by the Snyderites, Governor Snyder and his supporters in the legislature. Number two, increase the child care subsidy care amount so poor parents can work and work to help them sign up for medical coverage under the Affordable Care Act, which you'll remember, I'm adding, that our Senate approved, except they said it can't start for 3 months. So it won't be starting until April for no good reason. In fact, the state is losing millions of dollars it's going to have to spend for health care costs, sort of the penalty for not adopting Obamacare, Affordable Care Act. But all these people are suffering, too, for another 3 months before they even get to that. And that was, if I may be so bold to use Jack Lesenberry's term, the Snyderites that decided that. Also, her last suggestion, number three, raise the minimum wage and invest even further in early childhood development. Is that three and four? Mm-hmm. Okay. These children, again, are our future. We are stunting and starving our future and betraying our state and nation. So all you rich 5%, what are you going to do? Build robots to serve you in the future and to make your stuff? You think the other 95% can just sort of go away or be put in prison? Remember, Michigan has more people in prison percentage-wise and number-wise than any other state in the United States. Why is that? We just got a really good police force. We got a lot of criminals that live here. No, both those things are false, folks. We've got a problem with our criminal justice system. We have a problem with the way people are educated or lacking education. We have a problem with getting people good-paying jobs across the state. And that's why people turn to crime. And there's other reasons. But if the situations in society are not supportive, there's not too many other answers than crime. We've got to do something better. That's my opinion, mixed in with Jack Lesenberry's. Remember, want to do the qualifier, John? The disclaimer? Okay, all opinions expressed on the new WHFR Journal are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. Memorize that. That's your assignment for next week.
I'll do that better next time.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I threw that at him out of left field, but usually Dennis jumps in. As soon as I get in trouble, as soon as I state my first wild opinion, he jumps in and does the disclaimer. But we do thank Henry Ford Community College for letting us do that, broadcast our opinions. And if you don't agree, well, first of all, you can send us an email put in the subject line, the journal, at whfr@hfcc.com. So the address, all communication here, whfr@hfcc.edu. I said .com. Shame on me. whfr@hfcc.edu. And if you put journal in the subject line, you can give your opinion, no problem. But we don't want you to believe us. We're not pontificating here. We're stating opinions. And if these opinions have forced you to rethink yours or do some research, even better, do some reading about other possibilities, great. That's what we're really here for. Hope you understand that. Okay, unlike many other media outlets that want you to believe everything they say is absolutely true. And I won't mention any names. Okay, all the commercial media. Okay, I didn't. Did I say that?
No,
I didn't say that.
You wouldn't have said that.
No, I didn't say that. No, never. Okay. Anything else on that? Nope, we just hope for better next year. when the legislature gets back in session, certainly. Okay, so let's see here. Oops, we need another Jim Hightower, and then we'll come back with our final stories and actually some New Year's music, oh my gosh, and a little bit of history about a song that's often sung at New Year's, and I don't think anybody knows what it means. So what are we here for? Okay, news and information. But here's Jim Hightower's opinion about, in general, there's just too few people controlling the money in this country. Jim Hightower.
Sometimes it pays just to go away. You could ask Jim Skinner about that. He was CEO of the hamburger behemoth McDonald's, pulling down a hefty $8.8 million in pay. Last year, though, Skinner retired, and rather than getting a gold watch, he was given a load of gold, so large that even a Brinks armored truck would have been too small to haul it all away. His salary of $753,000 was the least of it. The Big Mac chain also served up $1.7 million to the chief in stock and $3 million in option awards. Then it slathered on another $10.2 million in retirement pay. All that was topped by a super-rich dessert, $11.6 million in incentive pay. What? Why does a guy with millions already on his food tray need any incentive to do his job? Maybe because Skinner found it hard to stomach the biggest part of his job, which was to pay poverty wages to McDonald's 800,000 workers, shove thousands of them onto food stamps and other programs paid for by taxpayers, and lobby aggressively to prevent any increases in minimum wage or any tax hikes on uber-rich elites like him. It's dirty work, but Skinner did it, finally skipping away with a 2012 pay package totaling $27.7 million. Yet, in the phantasmagoric plutocracy of corporate land, too much is not enough. Last year, for the first time ever, the 10 highest-paid CEOs in America hauled in at least $100 million each, even as the great majority of workaday families have lost income. This is Jim Hightower saying, this gaping and ever-widening inequality is the greatest threat to our society's cohesion. Too few people now control an unconscionable and untenable share of America's money and power, using it to grab more of both for themselves.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, December 27th, 2013, our last show of 2013. I say a fond farewell to 2013. It wasn't a great year personally for me health-wise, but every challenge makes us stronger, right? Oh, my goodness. New Year's resolutions, just do better, you know, get better. You have any, John, that stick in your head that are other than the usual we expect?
I was just going to say it's so great to see you hale and hearty again. So that's a big blessing for the new year.
That was supposed to be a secret to our listeners. But yes, I have had some challenges. But the WHFR staff, John Conroy, Dennis Reimars, and Susan McGraw, our general manager, and everyone here has been great in taking over what I was doing and doing it better. So I know that you guys don't really need me. And that's actually a comfort. But I'm actually going to get back in the saddle here as much as I can and try to cause trouble. After all, that's what we're making waves, you know, folks. Yeah, causing a little bit of trouble. Okay. Henry Ford Community College, there was a story, a report to the board last week in the Press and Guide, and it was good news is that our budget looks like it's going to be in good shape. We're probably going to end the year this year, 2014, with our fund balance again. That is sort of the protective balance of about $11 million. We think we're going to have about $9 million fund balance at the end of winter. And you know, folks, even the city of Dearborn, they have about $20 million. I think it's $19 million exactly. That's their rainy day fund. Why? Well, there's ups and downs for cities, community colleges. There's emergencies. You've got to have money saved, just not more than what you need, but just sort of what, you know, what has to be there. And but besides being financially secure here, and thank you for the millage support, of course, that really helped all you voters there in Dearborn. We have also joined the MEDC program, Michigan Employment Development Corporation program. It's called Career Jumpstart. And rather than going into details, I think the name is pretty direct. It must be a placement type activity program, Career Jumpstart. So get in the right classes, get in the courses. Maybe as soon as you're done with the classes, whatever it is, it's on the front page of the Dearborn Press and Guide from December 25th. So take a look at that and just know that we're trying to do things cutting edge here. Our new president, Dr. Stan Jensen, has got a lot of new ideas, things we haven't done in the past, like the Fairlane Mall application waiver, and it's good to be part of anything that helps get people into jobs, too, gets money coming in.
Certainly the exposure that MEDC will give to the Henry Ford Community College is a great step.
Mm-hmm. Want to mention, as I think we did in the past, but it's closer now, next Thursday, January 2nd, at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, the public is invited to the inauguration of the Dearborn City Council and the mayor. Okay, so all those people you elected, there's going to be the ceremony and in the Michael A. Guido Theater, and that's next Thursday, January 2nd, 7 p.m. Everybody's invited. There's going to be desserts afterwards. Mm-hmm. So if you get through the program, desserts in the lobby. I'm not sure what kind. Desserts. Anyway, it starts at 7 p.m., and I'm sure a fun time will be had by all. If you want to meet and greet, your elected representatives, even if you want to bend their ear a little bit while they're eating some ice cream or something afterwards, let them get their mouth full and then start telling them your problem. I think that would be a great time. And besides, they do, or they should, want to know the opinions of the people of Dearborn so they can better represent you. So maybe that's a fun idea. Maybe not for the kids, but maybe that's a fun idea to go to the inauguration. Again, next Thursday, January 2nd at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, 7 p.m. sharp. Okay. Dearborn, the city, and it's a big story. It's going to be this Sunday, Dearborn Press and Guide, has received a clean audit report. In other words, a clean opinion from Plant Moran. It wasn't a perfect report, though, but we're doing okay. Our revenues are going to be slightly more than expenses. And our fund balance, which I mentioned just a moment ago, the city savings account, if you will, crisis account, is just over $19 million. So that's all very good. However, there's a concern because the people in the finance department, a third of them, have left through downsizing and turnover. And Plant Moran said they've taken a lot of knowledge about where things are kept and how to do stuff. They call it institutional knowledge. And I know that can be a problem in an institution. And the auditors say the remaining staff members are pretty stretched to keep track of the money coming in and going out and making sure it's all legitimate, you know. And the auditors say they do a good job, but they work awfully hard. And so maybe we need to do something. But the number one problem is that golf course that we run, the Robert Herndon Golf Course, not the one out in Milford, not the Dearborn, what do they call that out there? It's the Dearborn Hills. No, it's not Dearborn Hills. It's out in Milford. It's that recreation area we own in Milford. Anyway, we own that place, but they're kind of breaking even, making money. The point here is that the Robert Herndon Dearborn Hills Golf Course, right off of Telegraph, north of something, is it north of Cherry Hill or north of Michigan Avenue? Somewhere in there. John doesn't know. He's a downriver guy. Yeah. He doesn't know. But they needed $185,000 to break even for their operation this last year. And Plant Moran says, got to do something about that for 2015 budget. Do we need to operate a golf course? You know, boy, if that was turned into residential, that's got to be valuable property. I mean, it's Dearborn Hills area. I mean, it's Dearborn Heights, but there's a lot of expensive homes around there. Who knows? Do we need another shopping center? I don't know. But I'm not a golfer. Okay, I admit that. I don't see any purpose in golf. I see no purpose in it. you know, hitting a little teeny tiny ball a long way to get it in a little teeny tiny hole. And there's not really an exercise. Well, people do a lot of walking, yeah, but they don't walk fast enough. And, you know, they hurt their arms when they swing so hard. And, well, I'm sorry.
It's just a great place for networking.
Yeah, it's one of the least expensive places to play golf. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it is more a populist kind of golf course that we run, and that's good. But it looks like golf is not quite as popular with the populace. Sorry. Also, they say they're not too sure about the Dearborn Administrative Center, you know, because maybe there's going to be more costs there. And that's a question, too. Other things they found. But basically, it's a good report, with the exception of the Dearborn Hills Golf Course, the Herndon Golf Course, and the whole question mark about maybe cost overrun at the Dearborn Administrative Center. So good for the city. All right. We're going to have to start winding down now here in the new WHFR Journal. We're going to close our show with some music, actually. How do you like that? And I want to do a little history first. Okay, where is it here? Here it is. Auld Lang Syne, okay? People always sing it at midnight of December 31st, or at midnight, the start of the day, descending to January 1st. It was, here's the information, folks, a Scots poem written by Robert Burns in 1788. Okay, set to the tune of a traditional folk song. And so it's Scottish, folks. Actually, as Wikipedia, my source, goes on, maybe it was based on some of the poetry of James Watson from 1711. So it goes way back. And I like his lines. Should old acquaintance be forgot and never thought upon, the flames of love extinguished and fully past and gone. Is thy sweet heart now grown so cold, that loving breast of thine, that thou canst never once reflect on old long syne, or the olden days? Sort of a criticism, sort of a negative criticism, that somebody is not remembering the past in a positive way. And there is some confusion about what the song actually means, or whether it's a positive or negative thing about reflecting on the past. Anyway, it's generally interpreted as a call to remember long-standing friendships. Friendships. Okay? So, hope you appreciate the Scottish tradition here, and we're going to feature Leah Michelle singing Auld Lang Syne. And then after that, immediately, Kate Shutt, who is an alternative jazz vocalist here in the U.S., that's S-C-H-U-T-T, look it up. What are you doing New Year's Eve? Thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal and to WHFR this year. There's always next year. Yes, there is. You need us, and we need you.
And Happy New Year to all our WHFR listeners, the station that's making waves.
This is WHFR Dearborn.
Should all acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should all acquaintance be forgot and Auld Lang Syne? For Auld Lang Syne, my dear, for Auld Lang Syne, we'll take a cup of kindness yet for Auld Lang Syne. And surely you will buy your cup, and surely you'll buy mine, and we'll take a cup of kindness yet for Auld Lang Syne. The daisies fine. tonight, but the seas between us broad have roared from
This is Jill Jack, and you are listening to WHFR Dearborn, independent radio, broadcasting since 1985.